Let's begin.
This is the boss.
I'm the boss.
And the gloss.
My lip gloss, I only rock clear.
On SB Nation Radio.
And SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Rocket Mortgage is with you every step of the way. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts studios. O'Reilly Auto Parts. Better parts, better prices every day. Here are your hosts, David Gal and Carla Dawson. I got
that. And it is time to fire it up. It is Monday night. I'm David Gow. I'm sitting next to the Monday Night Delight, Carla Dawson. Welcome in.
Thank you, David. Good to see you.
And Jose behind the glass.
Hey, guys. Carla's looking a lot better than I thought she would today.
Don't you think?
Oh, after that Raiders loss.
After that Raiders loss.
All we have to do, if we erase the second quarter, it's all good for Oakland. Every single Kansas City touchdown happened in the second quarter.
So Carla's going to be on.
I'm positive. I'm taking the silver lining there, Jose.
Maybe so. Carla's going to be on her best behavior tonight. Her man friend, that man about whom we never speak, has wandered into the studio and brought a dog along. So it's good to have him here. We've also got a young friend of yours.
Mini Gloss.
There's a daughter of Gloss in this world.
Watch out. There's more than one of us.
Oh, my.
Everyone should be running for the hills right now.
Run for the hills. Well, it's a special Monday night. We've got the Jets and the Browns about to tee it up. Jets, of course, don't have Sam Darnold. It'll be Trevor Siemian coming out of nowhere to lead the Jets tonight against the vaunted Browns with Baker Mayfield. Should be a fun matchup.
It's going to be really interesting. We're going to be watching Odell Beckham's wrist. Because why talk about football when we've got so much extracurricular surrounding it? So
what do you think? Will OBJ be wearing the $250,000 watch that he wore last week?
Yes. I think he's going to do it.
It's amazing that it's even a topic. OBJ was brought in to be the bell cow wide receiver to set a new tone, a winning tone in Cleveland. And much of Cleveland is talking about what he'll have on his wrist.
And you know what? That will be a perfect target for Greg Williams' defense. He's going to be all after that watch.
Well, he's been accused of going after players' health. Maybe he'll go after the watch. In fact, if I were playing against OBJ and I saw that he was wearing $250,000 watch, yeah, I'd go after it. I'd love to bust that watch. That would be game-changing.
We're going to make you do a little truth serum tonight. There is a said team that gave you a said bad taste in your mouth, and we're going to hear about it.
We'll hear about it right when we come back. You're listening to The Boston Gloss on SB Nation Radio.
This is The Boss and the Gloss on SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. From the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, here's David Gow and Carla Dawson.
All right, welcome back. Monday Night Football about to get underway, Browns and Jets. And we've just gotten word from you, Jose, that OBJ will be wearing a watch.
Who called it?
Well, you said.
That would be me.
But you know more about fashion than Jose and I do.
Not necessarily. You two are looking good.
Well, thank you. But Jose, what's the deal?
So apparently this week's watch is a silver one. There's only 10 made, and it's valued at $2
million. $2 million. And you'll subject it to all kinds of hits out on the field. I'm sure it's insured.
Well, you know, the good news is, look at Freddie Kitchen. He is a man of fashion and style. I'm sure he backs OBJ in this and says, it's all about the watch, dude. It's all about the watch.
It's all about the watch.
Oh, my goodness. This is...
Listen, you're the gloss. You understand fashion, good looks, appearances. You come in looking as you do every night. We've got listeners all over the country tweeting, what does she look like? Have you found her picture out there? Where do we find her?
Just to be clear, this isn't what left the bad taste in his mouth. I just want to say that.
Fair enough.
We're going to get to that.
All right.
Oh, man.
We're going to get to, well, one of the most interesting games to me was that the Patriots got an extra preseason game, effectively. They got to play the Dolphins in what was going to be unequivocally a rout, and it proved to be so. Antonio Brown.
43-0.
His debut for the Patriots, and they worked him right into the thick of things. I mean, it did not take them long. Brady to Brown is a combo that works.
Well, and he was targeted 8 times, the most targets of any receiver on the New England Patriots. And apparently he's really earned it because he's been with the team about less than a week, practiced I don't know how many days. And oh, yeah, did you know that there is a sexual assault, allegation, rape against him? But let's target him the most. I don't know how I feel about that. I know they're going to use him. They're paying him $9 million. He's a super talented receiver, you know, although he didn't get to see it in Oakland because he had too many other little situations going on. But it wasn't just using him. It was absolutely exploiting the fact that they have him. Did that leave a bad taste in your mouth?
Well, I would say this.
I want to know.
Two things. First of all, it was amazing to me how quickly Brady and Brown did have a chemistry. So that touchdown pass, the back shoulder pass, that's probably the hardest pass and catch combo of any route. Because you have to throw when the receiver isn't even looking, and the timing on that has to be perfect, and you're actually trusting that the receiver is going to turn around and get the ball as opposed to the defender. And yet Brady and Brown had that combo. Now, it was against the Dolphins. If it were to go awry and they had a mistake, it probably wouldn't have mattered.
It's so, like Miami High School.
Yeah, it was a good moment to test the waters. But I would tell you that watching that game, I've never been a Patriots fan, but I've always...
But you're not a hater.
No, I'm not a hater because I've always held them in a great deal of respect. I mean, what Belichick did to McVay last year, the way he schooled him, the brilliance of the Patriots, the brilliance of Belichick.
Cannot be denied.
I have always respected them. Yesterday, I disliked them. I disliked them for two primary reasons. One is...
Ooh,
yes,
bring it on.
Well,
we never hear you like this. I love it.
I turned on them last night because... Yeah. One, yes, they took advantage of Antonio Brown and used him as a beatdown on the Dolphins. But the second thing, the thing that really bothered me, is if they were running up the score on old friend Brian Flores and the Dolphins. So Brian Flores, of course, was the defensive coordinator under Belichick last year with the Patriots. And they were just ruthless. I mean, they were merciless. I mean, New England was throwing out of the shotgun in the fourth quarter, running up the score.
Blitzing like crazy.
And yeah, then they had an all-out blitz when they were up 43-0. I mean, it doesn't matter if the Dolphins have Ryan Fitzpatrick, Josh Rosen. Just let them go. I mean, it was enough. And so it was almost like Belichick was saying, don't you, coach, ever leave me. I'll show you. I'll make you pay. If you're one of my coordinators and you go to another team, I'm going to make you pay. No, it was not good optics. The Patriots looked like the bad guys. In any classic story, in any movie, there's always the good guy and the bad guy. Patriots were unequivocally the bad guy yesterday.
I agree with you. I don't like the whole situation that's going down. I just don't like anything about it. I'm excited that Josh Gordon is back. I think that is the right thing to give him another shot. He's had a rough time. I think this, if it's going to work anywhere, it's going to be New England. I really can't get over this Antonio Brown thing and the way that it was exploited yesterday. I don't like it. I think you're right. I think they've clicked over to a different realm. Their talent is there unequivocally, can't deny it, but they've gone a little in the gray area for just being a little dirty, really sticking it to Brian Flores and those pitiful Dolphins. Now, they have had a lot of bad luck at Miami. They have lost there a number of times, but there's no chance with this team that they would lose in Miami.
So other headlines from yesterday, it's sort of an interesting league today because, well, next weekend, starting at quarterbacks in this league will be Trevor Siemian, Teddy Bridgewater, and Mason Rudolph.
And Gardner Minshew.
Oh, and again. Gardner Minshew, not to be left
you
out.
Forget.
You know, and I know you don't forget.
I don't forget.
You love that mustache, don't you? You saw her.
Don't you, Jose, put those words in my mouth.
No, Jose, what was she talking about, that mustache with Gardner Minshew last week? She loved him.
Yeah, she loved the mustache.
She
was a big fan of the mustache.
He had a mustache. You too.
You did more than just mention it.
Yeah, the whole dance routine he did in the locker room.
Oh, that was Jose wasn't there for that. Did you hear that last
Oh, time? You missed that.
Oh,
well, he's notorious in the locker room.
At Washington State.
For dancing around with a resistance band, doing a resistance band in the locker room with only two things on, his mustache and a jock strap.
Headband.
Oh, he has the headband. Three. I've rounded down. I apologize. I don't want to shortchange him. You're right. He wears three things.
But it's not even to get attention. It's just like that's what he feels best. Like he's feeling himself. I'll be darned. So there we go.
Well, but Minshew actually showed pretty well yesterday against the Texans.
He did.
He gave the Texans.
I knew he was going to give them fits.
A scarier fourth quarter than they ever wanted to face.
Well, he did have the help of Bill O'Brien's beautiful clock management knot and Romeo Crennel almost once again giving away a game.
Well, Doug Marrone, the big decision there, he went for two. He went for the win.
Which you I didn't have a problem with.
Yeah, there really were two decisions. One is the decision to go for two. The other decision was what play are you going to run? And it seems universally people respect the decision to go for two, to go for the win. You're on the road. You've got a rookie quarterback. And the chance to win it on one play when you've got the rhythm and the momentum having just come down the field, it feels like people affirm that, but they didn't like the handoff to Leonard Fournette.
No, and it's easy to say that, actually, when it doesn't work. And it was millimeters away from not working. Credit Houston Texans safety Justin Reed. He came into the hole and made the stop of his life.
Yeah,
it was amazing.
If you want to say Marrone made a bad decision or he's an idiot for the call, he's an idiot by about a quarter of an inch. I mean, it could not have been closer. They had to look at it over and over and again. Justin Reed did save the day for the Texans. That would have been a devastating loss to start the season 0-2.
Oh, and it almost was. No, I don't think I would not put the idiot word on Doug Marrone at all. I think that call could have gone either way with the pass or a run. And if he passed and it didn't work, you would say, why would you not keep it on the ground with Fournette? So there's always something. But as we were talking earlier, you noted, and I think it's important to see too, Leonard Fournette could have actually had that with a reach.
Yeah.
But because of fear of fumbling and getting it knocked out, he really kept it much closer to his chest instead of really reaching that ball out.
And he didn't really have to really reach it out. I mean, it was so close. The Jaguars were so close. Texans would have had a little bit of time to come back down the field and maybe kick a winning field goal. But it would have put a ton of pressure on Deshaun Watson in that offense.
Yeah, there were 30 seconds left, and Deshaun can do that. He's got that. Although his game yesterday, maybe not so. But anyway.
Yeah, Deshaun was not as impressive week two as he was week one.
No.
But I think a lot of that has to do with that Jacksonville defense, which is quite a bit more stout than, well, the New Orleans defense he faced the week
it
one.
It may not be for week three. Jalen Ramsey wants out.
Jalen Ramsey wants out. Minka Fitzpatrick wants out.
Of Miami.
Taco Charlton wants out of Dallas.
Thanks, Antonio. Look what you set off.
Well, when we come back, we're going to get a chance to visit with Dr. Z, Lance Zierlein of NFL.com and Houston radio station 97.5 KFNC in Houston. He's also a scout for all of the draft season. We're going to visit with Lance. We'll ask him what it means that big-time talent now are trying to find their way out of their teams and land somewhere else. It'll be Lance Zierlein when we return here on SB Nation Radio.
This is The Boss and the Gloss on SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. From the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, here's David Gao and Carla Dawson.
Think O'Reilly Auto Parts for all your car care needs. Get guaranteed low prices and excellent customer service at O'Reilly Auto Parts. O'Reilly Auto parts, better prices every day. Joining us now on the Progressive Insurance guest line is Lance Zierlein. He's a show host here on KFNC 97.5 in Houston and an NFL draft expert for the NFL. Lance, thanks so much for joining David and Carla.
Well, I think you guys have more show sponsors than I have.
Well, we're working it hard.
Well, you're not the gloss yet, Lance. You can take that over any time.
Not a problem.
So it's great to have you on, Lance, and so many questions we want to run by you. We're going to pepper you with a bunch of them. One of them I've been waiting to ask you for several days. Minka Fitzpatrick, drafted a year ago, number 11 overall to the Dolphins, now wants out. What is he worth in today's market? What should somebody be willing to pay to get him on their team?
You know, I ask around about that. The answer I'm getting for the most part is second rounder.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's kind of counterintuitive because he was drafted in the first, and he wasn't a late first, but typically there are just certain positions where it's almost like a car. When you drive it off the lot, there's an immediate depreciation in terms of their draft value. Now, you know, quarterbacks maintain their value, and they can appreciate in value. Offensive tackles can obviously appreciate in value, as we saw with Laramie Tunsil. Pass rushers can appreciate in value. It happened with Frank Clark. It didn't happen with Jadeveon Clowney. But A lot of that has to do with who's making the trades. But Minkah Fitzpatrick is not a lockdown outside cornerback. He's more of a kind of a hybrid role, a big nickel, if you will, which means he can play in the slot, stop the run, cover. And because it's not a tier one priority position, there's a pretty good chance that you basically will back it out of the first round where he was drafted, and you'll have to look for a second rounder. So you might see someone who really covets him because he's a great fit, who would be willing to give you a first. But my guess is that it will be closer to a second round if and maybe when he's dealt.
Okay, let's look at Jalen Ramsey then. Higher impact position, shut down corner. What's his value worth?
I don't think his value is a first. But, you know, it's interesting because the Rams got a guy who was kind of a pain in Marcus Peters from the Kansas City Chiefs, and they gave up, I believe, is a third and a fifth for Marcus Peters, and he was a fantastic corner. He was a guy who took the ball away. Now, he wasn't as good in terms of just lockdown coverage, but he was great at making plays on the ball, but he was a real pain inside their locker room. And they got a third and a fifth for him. Well, that happens to be what the going rate was for Antonio Brown.
I was just going
to
say that. You're talking about the Raiders all over again.
That's right. When the Steelers dealt him, you know, all of a sudden here's another pain who went for a third and a fifth. I think the big difference is here is Jalen Ramsey is just rare from a height, weight, speed standpoint, incredibly competitive, and you can stick him on the very best wide receivers in the game. So I know he's a little bit of a pain. It might be a second and a third. It might be 2 seconds, but I have a feeling the team will be willing because the last few drafts haven't been heavy in cornerbacks. They've been a little light in cornerbacks. So I do think a cornerback of his ilk could fetch a first-round pick, even though you know you're going to have to pay up as well and pay him some big money.
Lance, staying with Jalen Ramsey, obviously yesterday it was fight night on the sides of the Jacksonville Jaguars with Doug Marone, Jalen Ramsey yelling at Doug Marone. Doug Marone then going over to approach. I've never seen this before. Yelling a player's face and another player having to separate the coach from Ramsey. Is that two things I want to know? Is what actually went down, if you know, and is that what really prompted him to get released and or to ask for a release? And is there any way the Texans could possibly get Jalen Ramsey? He and DeAndre Hopkins have this wonderful mutual respect for each other, and boy, could we use that. But I don't know if we even have any, if Houston has any draft picks left.
Yeah, I'll be honest with you. I don't know exactly what went down. I think it had to do with whether or not a play was challenged. I think Jalen Ramsey is upset that the coach didn't challenge a play where he believed DeAndre Hopkins dropped the ball and may have let the ball hit the ground. I think that was part of it. But this is a guy who was speaking out through the media all year long last year. Mm-hmm. He was a real he was a lot of trouble for them in terms of his how vocal he was through the media all year long. And I think it was very bad for morale for a team that had been at the AFC Championship game the year before. They fell completely apart last year. And I think Jalen Ramsey was, you know, and his behavior and his lack of leadership was one of the reasons for it. And I thought it was very interesting that he didn't speak to the media at all yesterday, because this is a guy who has been speaking a ton to the media over, you know, dating back to last year. And when he didn't, you know, I kind of felt like that was him trying to stay under the radar because he's going to want to get out. And that's a team that we've been waiting that they were either going to win the division or fall completely apart. I mean, they don't handle adversity well. And here they are at 0-2. I don't think it's a huge surprise he asked for a trade, to be honest with you. I think it's probably smart if you're going to ask for a trade, try to stay low-key in terms of your actual words. I don't think he'll be able to. I think he'll actually say something fairly inflammatory within the next 2 days to try to hasten his way out. And that's the new way. I mean, players over the last couple of years, it's just turned into, I think it was Antonio Brown, really. He and Le'Veon Bell started this, and now all of a sudden Minkah wants out because, and I can't really say I blame him in that particular situation, but then, you know, Jalen is going to complain and complain and complain until he's out, and I think he will be pushed out of there. I think it will be mutual. Now, the Texans, had the Texans not given away all their first-round picks for a tackle, they might have been in the mix. But with two first-rounders already gone over your next 2 years, I can't see the Texans in the mix. And besides that, I can't see Jacksonville dealing one of their rivals, the guy who's probably the best player on their team.
Yeah, that's a good point. And the other question I was going to ask you, you already answered, was, you know, I don't even want to mention the name Antonio Brown. It hurts me. But it seems like he has kicked off this I want out with, just like you said, Fitzpatrick, Jalen Ramsey, and now Taco Charlton wants to be released from Dallas. I mean, this is just, he is just a cancer that just seems to be eking out. And, you know, it worked for him. And he was showcased yesterday. We talked about in the last segment, just beautifully by the Patriots. And so, wow, it just looks like you do that and you're going to be rewarded for it. It's really frustrating.
Yeah, it really is. And, you know, he's a guy that can really, really play. But for him to do what he did the Raiders, I thought Mike Mayock handled it exactly how he had to handle it. They tried to play good cop, bad cop, and it ended up making Mike Mayock, you know, it ended up making him look a little weak at some points, even though he tried to stand strong. But, you know, I think they handled it the way they had to. Once I didn't think they ever should have dealt for him in the first place. But once you did, you still have to respond in the right way. And I thought the Raiders did. And now you look at the Patriots, and I don't know. I mean, we know the Patriots will have him on a short leash. If he can't handle himself, they'll just get rid of him. They can move on and go to someone else. But that, if he can't make it with the Patriots, he's done in football because no one else is going to touch him. Now, as far as Taco Charlton, he's not good enough to be making these demands. And so I think it's Dallas just played some hardball with Ezekiel Elliott. They're not just giving in to people. I don't see them just giving in to Taco Charlton. I think they'll just bench him.
We're talking to Lance Zierlein, who, among a number of roles, is an NFL draft expert. When we look at the Cowboys roster now, it does seem to be the product of a number of good drafts. In fact, Taco Charlton, you mentioned him, is probably the one pick they'd like to change out. Maybe a T.J. Watts would be a better pick there. But their drafts have looked pretty good. How do you evaluate the last couple of years?
Yeah, they've done a good job. I mean, you know, Jalen Smith looked like a huge, huge risk when they drafted him. And even after they drafted him in year two, it was like, whoa, they really missed it here. But that's just been a great story, his recovery. I love Leighton Vander Esch. I thought he was a fantastic player when he was drafted. And I think they really did a great job by landing him. We know that they've made offensive line a real priority. And I think that is, you know, that's really showed up. And, yeah, I think when you look across the board at what Dallas has done, Michael Gallup, to me, was good for where they took him. But then when you traded a first-rounder for Amari, I thought it was too much. But it turns out that was a first-rounder that was very wisely spent. And, of course, Zeke Elliott, I mean, what you were able to do is you got your quarterback, once again, the Dallas Cowboys, who had the triplets, and Emmitt Smith and Troy and Irving. Here they are again. It's just a little different. It's Dak Prescott, who was brought in with a fourth, and instead of a first-round pick on Amari, you traded a first for him. And, of course, Zeke was the fourth pick of the draft. So they've got their big three in place. They spent first-round picks on offensive line. They've got a good offensive line. They've got some good pass rushers. I like the guy Tristan Hill that they drafted last year from Central Florida. And I love the two linebackers in the middle. So I think it's, once again, if Dallas can just hold up on the back end in the secondary, I think it's a very dangerous team this year.
Lance, rolling back, it feels like forever ago, to Thursday Night Football, I painfully watched the Carolina-Tampa Bay game. What? I'm officially ready to hit the panic button as a Panther fan. What's going on, A, with Cam, and what's going on in the whole Panthers organization? I mean, to get beat by the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, and Jameis Winston did not have a great game by any stretch, but better than he could. I don't know. It was just an exercise in futility to me. Help me there.
Yeah, we've only got 1 minute for this answer.
Okay. Yeah, I would say with Cam, he's just been beaten up so badly that the shoulder is clearly still an issue. And I think he just is not the same player he once was. Mm-hmm. Then you look at the offensive and defensive lines. That's where the Panthers used to win, and I just don't think they're good enough on both fronts. But as far as Cam concerned, I think his best days are behind him, and I would not expect him to play at that Pro Bowl caliber level anymore.
That's the great Lance Zierlein. Lance, thanks so much for joining us this evening.
It's my pleasure, guys. Thanks.
Thanks, Lance.
Really fun to hear his insights on the Cowboys. They have drafted well. And, of course, Lance tracks the draft like no one else. And this is really, you can see the fruits of a lot of good draft picks over a couple of seasons.
Yeah, no, I thought it was great. And I loved his observation about Jalen Ramsey not speaking to the media yesterday. That's really fascinating.
A rare moment. He was quiet.
There we go.
All right, we'll be right back. You're listening to The Boss and the Gloss on SB Nation Radio.
This is The Boss and the Gloss on SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. From the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, here's David Gao and Carla Dawson.
Welcome back, and Monday Night Football underway. Browns now leading 6-0.
Two field goals.
Baker Mayfield had OBJ open and missed the throw. It would have been a catch that would have taken the Browns inside the 10. And I'll tell you what, I don't think OBJ is the kind of receiver who will be very patient with a quarterback missing passes.
We're about to see, aren't we? Looked like a little frustration from both quarterback and receiver. So,
well, nothing soothes problems like that, like winning. And if the Browns can come out with a win tonight, they'll probably be just fine. They really do need to win, though. I mean, it's almost silly, but it's fun to speculate. If the Browns were to lose to a Jets team led by Trevor Siemian, I think all of Cleveland would have a collective heart attack. And then the possibility of an implosion from within, OBJ doing a temper tantrum and yelling at Freddie Kitchens and maybe Baker Mayfield and all the drama that could come from a high-maintenance team led by a first-year coach who's never been through this before. The Browns are a time bomb. They need to win to stay on track.
And they've got so much talent and so much young talent. I mean, all across the board. But also young is Freddie Kitchens in his NFL maturity, meaning as a head coach. This is his first time. And to get everyone to gel, that's a whole nother. It's one thing to have all this individual talent. It's another thing to make it all work. So we'll see what happens. But yes, can the hype live up to the hope in Cleveland is what they're banking on.
Well, we shall see. Now, another game I found interesting yesterday was the Buffalo Bills and the New York Giants. Josh Allen comes away with the win for the Bills, and he looked pretty good.
He did look pretty good.
When he needed to perform, he performed. His stats weren't overwhelming. But the guy now, all of football is looking at closely, Eli Manning, is he near the tail end of his career? The calls for Daniel Jones are pretty pervasive.
Well, you know, Pat Shurmur was non-decisive today. And I guess as he should be, he's got to evaluate everything. But he says they evaluate every position every week. I think Eli can see what's coming. When you invest in your first round pick, number 6 overall, your fan base wants to see it. Now, you don't do what your fan base wants, but when you're not winning, they're 0-2, and it's not looking pretty.
If I were a career guidance counselor for Daniel Jones, or even if I were coaching Pat Shurmur about what to do with this young rookie.
Would you bring him in now?
No, that's my gosh. It's like throwing him to the wolves. But the Giants are... One, they've got a porous defense, so they're likely to play from behind, which is never good for a quarterback. Mm-hmm. Their offensive line may be average right now. Saquon Barkley's exceptional, but the receiving core is very poor. Sterling Shepard, Golden Tate have not been on the field. I mean, it's...
You've got Saquon Barkley.
You can poke at Eli Manning, but this is a Giants team that is woefully weak across the board. And I just think that would be setting Daniel Jones up to fail. He may fail anyway, but you've got to give him every chance to succeed.
No, I agree. I think this is a no-win situation to put him in. And I say at this point, you've gone with the Eli Manning. It's not apparent that he is losing the games. I mean, you noted, you know, there weren't a lot of perfect passes yesterday, but you know what? There are no weapons for him. He doesn't have any support around him. And is this how you want to start the Daniel Jones era that could end like the David Carr era in Houston?
All right, it was Cowboys over Redskins yesterday. Cowboys looked very good.
You're just looking extra happy in your Dallas Blue shirt for the second week in a row.
As I take a sip from my Dallas Cowboys
mug.
Yes,
I know. I'm looking at that, too.
Thank you, Jose, for whatever you put in there. Cowboys, though, looked good. Dak Prescott made another case for a good contract, 26 of 30. He had a slow start.
His price tag's going up.
Yeah, once he got his rhythm going, he was outstanding. One real setback for the Cowboys, though. They lost Michael Gallup, their wide receiver, who will have an arthroscopic knee surgery and sit out for about 4 weeks. He really was fitting in neatly as a strong number two.
He had a beautiful game week one against Washington. Washington.
Exactly. Well, he has been the number one receiver over the first 2 weeks for the Cowboys offense. As obviously defenses are focused more on Amari, that's opened up some space for Gallup, and Gallup has stepped into the role very neatly. Then, of course, Randall Cobb is their number three. Those three form an exceptional trio. Yesterday, though, they got a great surprise from Devin Smith, a guy who seemingly has come from nowhere. You may remember Devin Smith. He was a standout wide receiver for Ohio State, drafted in the second round by the Jets back in 2015. Tore his ACL, rehabbed it, tore it again, rehabbed it, and then came to the Cowboys camp, won the job, won at least a roster spot, and they're going to have to look for him to be sort of that fourth wide receiver while Malik Gallup is out on the injury for the next month.
Well, and that's a stout core, and good for him to get that opportunity and step up. Then you got to look at the other side of yesterday's Dallas game, Washington.
Yeah.
I mean, Adrian Peterson had a big day yesterday. He moves into fifth place all-time in career rushing touchdowns, passing Jim Brown.
Well,
I mean, really?
I mean, he's been fantastic for now a very long time. It's almost remarkable that he's still around.
He has 107 touchdowns in his career. He's got Walter Payton's next up on the list with 110. So I'm thinking we're going to see that from AP this year.
Well, Case Keenum has his moments. I will say, though, the most heartening thing for the Redskins.
Oh, it's Trent Williams.
Well, no, I wasn't going to. That's a disheartening thing.
Oh, yeah.
I'm going to something positive for a minute. Terry McLaurin, their wide receiver, they drafted him in the third round, another Ohio State guy, and he is a speedster who is really electric. You just see him finding holes in the defense, able to get behind a lot of defenders. Terry McLaurin, remember his name. He's going to be a guy.
You heard it here. The boss says.
Redskins are going to be proud of him. They're not so proud of what's happening with Trent Williams. He is still a holdout. He's their left tackle. And I don't know that there's a quick resolution to that. Both sides seem to be dug in. I will say this. When the Cowboys had Ezekiel Elliott threatening to hold out, there was this notion that, well, if the Cowboys start off poorly, they'll get desperate and they'll sign Elliott quickly and get him in because they'll need him right away. In this case with the Redskins, Skins are 0-2. They're not going anywhere. I don't think their losses make them desperate for Trent Williams. I think it makes them shrug their shoulders and say, what difference would it make? I mean, they're saving all that money on him. They're going to fine him. Trent Williams on that
team.
They are
finding him, yeah.
Yeah. Trent Williams, though, just doesn't make a difference right now. Redskins are, I think, on a fast track to nowhere. If you look at the NFC East, it's the Eagles and the Cowboys division to win. Mm-hmm. Redskins could, I mean, I hate to say it just 2 weeks into the season, but they're getting to a place where three or four games in, they may just want to give Dwayne Haskins some repetitions and see what he's got.
Well, that's right, except that you've paid Case Keenum nicely up front. So, you know, but who stepped in nicely for the Redskins is Donald Penn. They signed the veteran left tackle, and they really haven't missed a beat at that spot with Trent Williams. And, you know, he's racking up in the millions of dollars of fines, and they're not about to forgive the fines. They've said that publicly, and that they're not going to give Williams a new deal under no circumstance. So it really is looking like he's not going anywhere.
All right, let's shift to Indy and Tennessee, the Titans and the Colts.
An AFC South matchup. Here we go.
Well, it was exciting at the beginning, right? Mm-hmm. There was a fire on the sidelines.
Oh, my gosh.
How often do you hear that?
A wave of pyrotechnics set the speaker on fire.
I would have loved to have just been there, and all of a sudden I see everyone go scrambling. Can you imagine the ground crews?
Well, did you see the picture? I had to laugh. I mean, this guy comes out with, like, it looked like a Bic lighter to put the darn thing out. I'm like, buddy,
it was a big time fire.
It was huge.
No fires in this studio, though.
Yeah.
All right, but the heartwarming moment. Well, I thought Dan Quisenberry. We know him from Houston. He was drafted in the sixth round by the Texans.
David Quisenberry. Yep.
Tell his story.
So he's a cancer survivor. He had non-Hodgkin's lymphoma and missed 3 years of football fighting a very serious form of cancer.
Yep.
And he did end up coming back to be cut by the Texans. Unfortunately, it just was too hard for him to come back. Got picked up and tell them what he did yesterday. It's pretty exciting.
Well, not only did he play, just to be on the field is outstanding, but he did a tackle-eligible pass play, caught a touchdown pass from Mariota, and that was a special moment for everybody.
It was, and he looked good doing it.
Yeah,
he did. Great.
You know what? The throw was just off to the side. He had to adjust in the air. The nimble one.
He looked like he knew what he was doing.
He was really impressive.
That was amazing. I loved it. That was a happy moment for the San Jose State star.
Great to see him do that. All right, let's go to Seattle and Pittsburgh. Seahawks with the win in a game that may go down. We may remember it as Ben Roethlisberger's final game in football. I mean, at 37, with his elbow injury, you certainly have to question whether he can come back.
It was a non-contact injury, too. So it's obviously something he's been dealing with, which may explain why he couldn't get throw a touchdown pass week one. They put 3 points on the board. But he's going to have undergo surgery. It was decided today. He'll miss the entire season. I mean, to me, this what's been going on for the last year is just a slow end to the era as we know it in Pittsburgh. Le'Veon Bell, now a Jet. The unnamed person who was a Raider and then now a Patriot.
The person about whom we will never speak
That's
again.
Exactly right.
Yes.
And now Ben Roethlisberger at 37. And he was contemplating retirement at the end of the regular season, as it was, but decided to come back. And I think he's saying now that he'll be back and stronger than ever. But
okay,
I don't know.
You listed Bell, Brown, and Roethlisberger, mm-hmm. three big-time talents. I want to throw Ryan Shazier in there, the great linebacker.
Yes.
He was outstanding on the defensive front. He was a guy on his way to Pro Bowls. And now you look at four big-time, really top-of-the-league type talent who have left that team either through injury or some kind of drama.
No, there's a lot of drama in Pittsburgh. Here's what I want to know. Two questions I have for you. Do you think Mason Rudolph, former Oklahoma State quarterback, is going to be a good plug-and-play answer for the Steelers? And are you worried about Mike Tomlin's job starting the season 0-2? Is he on the hot seat?
Well, of course, Rudolph drafted in 2018 in the third round. He was, well behind the elite quarterbacks of that draft.
There were a lot of good quarterbacks.
There were a lot of good. I mean, Baker Mayfield, Sam Darnold, all those in that group. Josh Allen, well, Lamar Jackson now looks like mm-hmm. he's an Woo. Elite quarterback from that draft. But no, I don't think. I mean, the ideal, of course, was that they were drafting Ben's successor, and
he wasn't pleased about it. If you remember.
Well, that's right. Ben saw that in the rearview mirror, mm-hmm. and look, they've been grooming him for this moment. We'll see. But notably, the talent around the quarterback position in Pittsburgh is not what it used to be. Juju Smith-Schuster, a credible wide receiver, but maybe a guy who really plays as an elite number two, not a number one.
And he is their number one.
And they've had
the departure.
He has to step in. I mean, James Washington needs to grow up here into this role too. But no, I think the Steelers are, well, winter is coming. It's going to be a long, long stretch for this team. And by definition then, Mike Tomlin's job is at risk because coaches don't get a long time to turn around a team in decline. And with all the talent that's walked out the door and a young guy in Mason Rudolph, who wasn't even that highly regarded coming out of college. No, winter is coming for Pittsburgh.
You know, it's tough. I look at Tomlin's, you know, record as a head coach with the Steelers. He's 125-68-1. That's a great record.
Great record. Steelers have been good for a long time.
And now that we've really, now that that receiver, number 84, now that his antics, the former Pittsburgh Steeler 84, now that his antics are public, we know what Mike Tomlin has been dealing with for years.
Can you imagine?
In that locker room. Credit that man.
Suddenly he gets the Purple Heart Award. He dealt with Antonio Brown for all those years.
I know, but I hate to agree with you. I think he is probably going to be a little bit on the hot seat. But it's a young team. I don't know. I'm worried about him. Worried about him. I think he's a good guy. I like him as a coach. I like him as a person.
All right. When we come back, we're going to check in at how things are going in Green Bay between the head coach and that star quarterback,
Ooh, yeah.
Aaron Rodgers, when we return here on SB Nation Radio.
This is The Boss and the Gloss on SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. From the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, here's David Gao and Carla Dawson.
Okay, we talked about Jalen Ramsey and Doug Marrone, but there was another little catfight on the sideline. Aaron Rodgers and first-year head coach Matt LaFleur. There's been a little bit of tension in the offseason over who controls that offense, and you saw it spill out on the field yesterday.
Yeah, it was interesting. They both laughed about it in their post-game pressers, and I think it was over some sort of a defensive stand that they saw, and Aaron Rodgers didn't like it. And Matt LaFleur, he came and questioned Rodgers over the look that Rodgers gave him, the disapproving look, and he said, hey, we're both competitors. This is what's going to happen. I think, I don't know. You're both peers, and I'm thinking Aaron Rodgers is an 11-year veteran. You're a first-year head coach, and he wants you to defer to him.
Well, they can laugh about it in the press conference because they won, and winning cures such drama.
Yes, it does. It just does. The ills, doesn't it?
I mean, Packers 2-0, they're on a run right now, and they might be one of the elite teams in the NFC. It's always hard to draw conclusions this early, but they're on the short list, top 4 or 5, as it would seem at this moment.
Their defense but if looks
they,
good.
If they have adversity, that's what would turn the tide, right? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Week one, they beat the Bears, and their defense really carried the day, shutting down Trubisky. But that might not be so much a statement about the Packers' defense as it is about Mitchell Trubisky. But if they face adversity, if they have a losing streak of 2 or 3 games, if they're struggling, you've got to watch the relationship between LaFleur and Rodgers.
I think it's a struggle for control. Matt LaFleur, as a head coach, clearly wants to have control over the team, have a control over his offense. And Aaron Rodgers is saying, I've been doing this for a long time. I'm a Super Bowl winner and an MVP. I don't need you to control me. I think that's kind of what's going on. It's like
yeah, well, LaFleur's offensive philosophy, the Shanahan philosophy, is you come
less
up to
audibles.
The line with one of two plays and you can go one or the other. But it's not a wide open playbook audible at the beginning of the play, and that's what Rodgers is accustomed to doing.
Is this music saying we're already done with hour one?
We're done with hour one.
That's sad.
Yes, it is.
Got started.
When we come back, we'll give you an update on Monday Night Football, Jets and Browns. And Browns have the early lead. You're listening to The Boss and the Gloss on SB Nation Radio.